Welcome to Living in Hi-Fi. I'm Steve.
And I'm Flizzy. This is a podcast about records. Today's album is Hypnotique by Korla Pandit on Fantasy Records from 1961, catalog number 3329.
So I have absolutely no idea where this record is from, other than it's a Flizzy acquisition. And all of a sudden, we seem to have sprung an abundance of Korla Pandit albums.
There's only two. Well, there's going to be more, though. So just be prepared for that. So I was in Frederick having coffee with a friend of mine. Hi, Carrie. And after we had coffee, I walked down Main Street. It was a nice day. And there's a record store downtown. And their store was definitely like a little bit more like rock and kind of punk focused. Seemed like they had some vinyl from some local artists, and this was in their new acquisitions folder, both of these albums. And it just has that Exotica flavor that I'm always got an eye out for. And so, of course, I bought them both, which is all they had.
So do you want to tell us what the album looks like, Flizzy?
So on the cover is this very painterly illustration of this pair of men's eyes. And he's wearing a turban with like a little pendant attached in the front. And it just says Hypnotique and Korla Pandit in big block letters. And then on the back, it has Hypnotique again by Korla Pandit. It's got the track listing. And then it has a little biographical thing on the back about how it starts with pretty high praise. Any attempt for the writer or critic to apply the commonplace language of musical comment to the work of Korla Pandit must inevitably end in hapless frustration. I mean, this is going to be some serious music. And then it also has in the bottom a little biographical information about Mr. Pandit, born in New Delhi, India, as a gifted child and eventually coming to study at the University of Chicago. And it's I've got a little collection of other albums on Fantasy Records in the other corner.
Yes, and a nice like illuminated drop cap at the beginning of their little liner notes or whatever.
Yes, indeed.
All right, so do you want to tell us about the track that you picked, Flizzy?
Sure, I picked Stardust. It's on side B and it's track 2.
All right, let's take a listen.
So what do you think about my pick?
All right. So I have to say, I'm not sure what I was expecting, but I'm not sure that this was it. And I feel like I have a hard time making sense of this music in my head. I feel like, you know, it's kind of relaxing. I mean, particularly this album, it's like, I feel like good music for going to sleep by. And I don't know. I mean, the best thing I can come up with for this track is it sounds like something that's like background music from like some 1940s movie or something. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I can help you out there with the with some more content from the back cover. Listen closely, and you will soon discover that there's more than a little of the mystic in Corolla Pandit. Are you hearing some mysticism?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe. I just got some hints of an Indian raga in there somewhere.
A hint of esoteric patterns of the Hindu raga,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, but as soon as I heard it, it was gone.
Fleeting?
Fleeting, indeed.
Hypnotized? Would that be another thing that happened?
Possibly.
So anyway, what I liked about this particular pick was, of course, the thing that I love most about this album is the Hammond. Like, how much do I love the Hammond organ? We've already featured some pretty stellar Hammond organ on this podcast. We talked about Walter Wanderley a couple weeks ago, and before that, the John Buzan Trio. And both of those are like, that's on like some pretty raucous party Hammond. And this is a little bit more chill than my normal Hammond organ tastes, I think. The other thing that I think is interesting about this track in particular is that it has this like very sweet piano intro. And then throughout the song, it alternates between piano and organ. And then a little bit towards the end of the song, there's like piano and organ layered one on top of another. And I think he created this effect. If you've ever seen like Yanni, does anybody remember Yanni? I don't know. But he's got like this, like,
is that the pan flute guy?
No. He's got like the deluxe piano setup. So I think Corolla Pandit had that same sort of like L-shaped piano setup where there's grand piano to one side and then the organ on the other, and he played both of them at the same
time.
Who
was the pan flute guy? Now I want to listen to some pan flute.
Zamfir.
Oh, Zamfir. Okay.
Look at me dropping all this easy listening knowledge.
Well, so what can you tell us about the mysterious Corolla Pandit?
Okay, this is so awesome. So all this stuff on the back cover about Corolla Pandit being from New Delhi and having hints of his heritage in these ragas, all lies. And it's like, it's such a cool story, I think. So he was born John Roland Red, September 16th, 1921, in St. Louis, Missouri. And he is from an African American family, and both of his parents were direct descendants of slaves. So he was trained as a musician pretty young. He went to a segregated school and learned to play piano when he was young. And I guess in his family, there were a lot of musicians. So he started with music pretty young. And then by 1940, he moved to L.A. and started going by Juan Rolando. And at that time, he was already rocking this turban. Like, I think even before he took on this Latin American name, like you could see like Juan, John, Roland, Rolando, like it's not a huge stretch.
Yeah, but what does wearing a turban have to do with being named Juan Rolando? I that doesn't make any sense to me at all.
I don't think. I mean, I think like he was already wearing the turban and he just continued to like rock the turban at that time. I don't know the origin of the turban.
But I can see how maybe that wasn't an effective persona because people wouldn't be confused.
Yeah, like why is this Latin guy wearing a turban? Yes. Do not know. And then by 1943 in LA, he was an organist for a radio station. And so they would do these things that they called transcription records. And it would basically be like, you know, the music bed for various stuff on the radio. During that time when he was living in LA, he was living with some family, and he met Beryl June DeBeeson, who was a friend of his sister. And Beryl June DeBeeson was an artist for Disney. And they eloped to Mexico and got married in Mexico, because at the time, believe it or not, in the U.S., it was interracial marriages were illegal at that time. And so they had to elope to Mexico. And when he moved back to the U.S., by 1948, they had together developed this Corla Pandit character, because, you know, that did a couple things. It helped them, you know, kind of keep themselves safe in their marriage. And also, because of that, during that time, there was still so much segregation. As a Indian, posing as an Indian person, he had like more rights than an African-American person. And I think, you know, even when he was younger as a musician, like he probably saw that there were black artists that had, you know, rights that otherwise African-Americans wouldn't have. So there would be black musicians that would have access to nightclubs that normally only white people would be able to get into. And so like putting on another character like further allowed him some accessibility to things that otherwise he wouldn't have had access to. So you can kind of see like why they worked so hard to develop this character. Anyway, so by 1948 they developed this character, and then he first kind of got his break as Corla Pandit, first started getting some notoriety as that character by providing background music for Chandu the Magician, which was a radio show. And then in 1949, he had this little show called Corla Pandit's Adventures in Music. And it was basically like this little 10-minute show that would be like the filler between TV shows. So if you had like maybe a music special that was only 20 minutes long, then they would have like these little music clips that would go in between the end of one show and the beginning of the next one. And then in 1951, then that little program got national syndication and turned into a half an hour show. And eventually he even had an hour long show. Anyway, he had a lot of popularity between 1949 and the early 1950s. And due to some like contract negotiations, he was replaced by Liberace, who, as we know, is another flamboyant piano player in 1953. So, and it was kind of awkward. It seems like Liberace even just basically took up residence in Corla Pandit's set. So if you look at like a Liberace music clip from 1953 and like a Corla Pandit TV show from 1952, for example, it would be like the set, grand piano, everything's exactly the same. So, you know, after that time, like he still was super popular. He still made some TV appearances and film appearances. On the Fantasy label, he released, I think, 13 albums. He had some other releases on other labels over the years. And he stayed really active during the remainder of his career. He played nightclubs and opening events for businesses. He taught private lessons. He appeared in theaters. He made cameos. His final appearance was in the 1994 film Ed Wood by Tim Burton. And you can see him like basically playing himself. He's playing a piano in the background of a party. And then he died in 1998. All of this time, he was able to maintain this persona. Like, it was not made public that he was actually not Indian. He was African American from Missouri. And I think, like, all of his family, like, worked very hard to keep everything quiet, because it really did afford him a lot more freedom than he would have had otherwise. And then in 2001, there was an LA Magazine article that revealed his background. And then in 2014, there was a documentary about him. There's some interviews with other artists, and it goes into a little bit more detail, sounds like, about all of his history.
So do you know how ultimately it was discovered that he was not, in fact, the character that he had?
I'm not 100% sure. I would really like to watch the documentary to get the full details of this. It sounds like there was another contemporary of Korla Pandit. They, I guess, were taking music classes together, and this guy, this jazz musician, was like, well, you know, I'm doing pretty good, but there was this guy that I went to school with. His name was John, and he was a much better player than I was. And then, like, you know, 20 years later, he's like, hey, I know that guy, and he is not Indian. So I think, like, that guy had a hunch, but I'm not sure how it was exposed in this LA Magazine article. In 2004, there was this fan page where I got a lot of this biography details from. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. And it sounds like the author of that website got followed that lead and found a copy of his birth certificate. So, I don't know.
All right, well, should we get to our second clip?
Yeah, what did you pick?
I picked the song Stella by Starlight, and that is the last track on side B.
The slowest ever version of Stella by Starlight that I have ever heard. That's a lot of like 50s melodrama in this, and I can see why you picked it too. The guitarist on this album, his name is Arthur Bergman, and I think it's like the guitar on this track has a little bit of bossa nova flavor, and so is that a thing that may have drawn you to this particular song?
Yeah, well, Stella by Starlight, I guess it is from the Paramount picture, The Uninvited, which I don't think I've ever seen.
No, I don't think I have either.
But I'm familiar with it because, I guess, like you mentioned, the guitar playing sounding bossa nova-like. Well, on Baden-Powell's first album, he had a version of the song.
Uh-huh.
And then, more recently, the John Gary album Encore, which we featured on the show,
right,
has this song on it, and they are both definitely very different versions from this and almost not recognizable, I guess. And I don't know. I mean, it sort of continues my confusion or inability to sort of, make sense of this album in my head. And, you know, it's like this song, I think, ends up sounding like if you were to have some sort of Hollywood movie music of some sort of romantic Hawaiian vacation or something, and it's like playing something in the evening while some characters are like having some romantic dinner or something.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, yeah, this whole album overall is kind of, I think, yeah, hard to classify. I mean, we were listening to a little bit, I guess, from one of his other albums, and I would say that that album just sounds sort of overall to me like it's carousel music. But this album is more like somewhere between silent movie and, in some cases, sounds kind of like music that you might hear at a funeral.
Oh, no.
So I don't know, but I mean, overall, it's, I don't know. I mean, it's not bad. It's not good. It's just kind of, it's kind of interesting, I guess. So what, I mean, what do you think? What do you think about this album overall, Felicity?
As soon as I played this album, I'm like, oh, I'm so super into this. This is like, I mean, it has all the elements of things that I like from music from like the late 50s and early 60s. It has like, it has just sort of ubiquitous exoticism, even in the title Hypnotique. It's got some of my favorite Exotica jams on there. It's got the Red Sails in the Sunset, and it has these like extraordinarily slow and melodramatic versions of standards. It has this like phony biographical character. Like, it is just, it's like so meta Exotica.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, I don't know, I like that it is like, I don't know, I feel kind of like a unique take on the Hammond organ, definitely different from Walter Wanderley, which we heard. But yeah, I mean, I would say, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where the liner notes author was getting his information, because I find absolutely no hints of Indian ragas on this album.
Yeah, and
it just sounds very, I don't know, I guess very sort of like Hollywood.
Yeah, and I think like if you think about like back in the 50s in LA, like what did anybody have anything to do about Indian culture at that time? Like, we are not as global as we are now. Like, yeah, like I would say, like, you know, we have reviewed like Herb Alpert and Tijuana Brass and Baja Marimba Band. Like, I feel like Southern California, like, okay, yeah, we can understand like Mexican things and Latin America things, but like India might as well be on a different planet. And you got this guy who's like, I'm Indian. Here are hints of our Indian music. Like, I can see where people be like, oh, yeah, that's legit. I don't know any better.
I guess there's no better time and place to try to sell your phony story. Yeah. So overall, worth owning, Fussy?
For sure.
Definitely for the red vinyl, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention that when I was talking about the cover. Like, I was not expecting that. Like, I don't think we have any albums from this period of time that are colored. And so when I pulled it out of its sleeve, I was like, oh, it's red. Oh, it was so exciting.
And I'm sure, yeah, this album and its counterpart will be joined by soon additional Corlapandit albums.
You know, my birthday's coming up, people.
So for more information, you can visit our show notes at livinginhifi.com/episode/50, where we'll have a link to more information about the documentary and his biography. As always, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Living in Hi-Fi. For longer correspondence, you can email us at feedback@livinginhifi.com. And next week, we have something, I guess, sort of in the Hollywood vein also. Something, I don't know, I mean, I guess maybe for connoisseurs you might be aware, but something maybe for a little unexpected. So stay tuned for that. And thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.